high 63. Sunshine right now, 41 degrees in Racine, 40 in Kenosha, 35 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg.
Lush and colorful music comes from one of the great masterworks from the opera repertoire, Madama Butterfly by Giacomo Puccini, one of the supremely beautiful and moving scores. In many respects, it's the opera with which I first fell in love with opera as a college student back in the early 1970s. So I always feel the deepest sort of affection for this score, and I'm so excited that the Milwaukee Florentine is going to be presenting it in performances this coming weekend. We have several interviews with three different people involved in this production, and our first interview is with the man who is going to be on the podium conducting this sublime score, Francesco Lecce Chong, who is also making his conducting debut at the Milwaukee Florentine, leading this beautiful work, which is directed, by the way, by William Florescu, who happens to be the general director and artistic director of the Milwaukee Florentine. But I'm happy to begin our trio of interviews with the conductor, Francesco Lecce Chong. Maestro, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thanks for having me here.
Really happy to have you here. And welcome to Milwaukee and to the Milwaukee Florentine. Tell us about the invitation that came to become part of the Florentine. What is your connection to the company before this?
So I actually just finished up 4 years as the associate conductor with the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. And actually, quite frankly, when I finish the last performance of Madame Butterfly, I will be driving out to Pittsburgh, where I'm starting a new job as the assistant conductor of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. So I have a strong connection to the city since I've been here. And actually, when I first came to Milwaukee to start my job here, it was my first professional job. I come from college where I've been very active in opera. And I knew that I really wanted to stay involved in the opera world. And so the first thing when I got to Milwaukee was to look up the opera company, Florentine Opera, and get in contact with them and find ways to use their studio artists with the symphony for some educational programming, and just try to kind of build some connections between the two companies. And of course, there already is the most important connection, which is that the symphony plays for the operas in the pit.
So you have a deep. Mm-hmm. So you have a deep connection with all of these players who with whom you're working for Madame Butterfly. So you're not a guest at all.
Not really. It'll be like coming home. It'll be wonderful to be with them all again, and working out such a great score. And actually, you know, talking with them, I think they're excited to try out something different with me.
Very good. Madame Butterfly, as I said, is one of the most beloved works in the repertoire, and the score, top to bottom, is absolutely amazing. Not only in its beauty, but also in its varied colors, as Puccini evokes a Japanese landscape, but sprinkling in other intriguing elements as well into this really terrific score. How difficult is it to play? How difficult is it to sing? And how difficult is it to conduct?
I would say it's pretty high up on all three of those marks. Of course, when you're trying to do anything at the highest level, which is exactly what these singers and this orchestra, and hopefully I am capable of, you're taking this to a level where it is extremely difficult as far as flow and coordination and drama. Puccini asks for everything, you know, all the colors you could possibly want. And it's an opera that really, it moves, in my opinion, very quickly and asks for us to bring the drama onto the stage in a very realistic way. You know, there isn't any kind of long arias in many ways. You know, Butterfly has these sort of three arias, one, you know, Verdi, which we all know, and the other two are really kind of, they're kind of snuck in. And even Verdi, you know, is a very dramatic reason it needs to be there. So there's nothing superfluous in this opera, and it really moves in that way. It's quite magnificent.
One of the big challenges, of course, to singing this opera in particular, and others by Puccini and others from this time period, is that the orchestral part is such a lush, full, rich part that you really have singers who have to contend with that in order to be just heard above this magnificent flood of sound, compared, for instance, to singing over an orchestra in a typical bel canto opera or an opera by Mozart, mm-hmm. for instance. Even a lot of Verdi does not have this torrent of sound pouring from the pit. What kind of challenge is that specifically, especially for you as the conductor, and for that matter, for those playing this score, to be true to what Puccini conceived, and yet to not turn it into an orchestral accompaniment with faint voices heard in the background?
It is a challenge. It's always a challenge with opera in general, even those scores that we think are light. You know, one of the things when the Milwaukee Symphony opened up this season with Così fan tutte, even with Mozart, I was in the hall assisting Edo DeVart, making sure that balance was working out. There always are going to be some issues. I feel slightly better in this case because I heard Alison Cambridge, our Totrosan, she sang La Bohème a couple seasons ago with Florentine, and I was there for several rehearsals and performances. And I just heard her, you know, soar above the orchestra. So I'm not too concerned with someone like her. It's going to be just incredible the way she carries her voice. She's just perfect for this role. It's really amazing to see her creating it for the first time in front of all of us. It's amazing. And it's a matter of being sensitive. And in many ways, I think a great opera conductor is one that without saying anything helps an orchestra also listen to the singers. And in turn, once we're all listening to these singers on stage, then balance becomes, of course, less of an issue.
Hmm. One of the things that is also tricky about this kind of music is that this particular score is that in many respects, no two measures are exactly the same. I mean, there's a constant shifting in meter, a constant shifting in sort of the harmonic palette of it. It's just a really complicated score. I mean, modern in that respect, although, I mean, when people hear it, of course, it's lushly romantic and completely beautiful, but very modern, again, compared to, for instance, Mozart. Not that that doesn't present certain challenges, but this is something altogether different in terms of that sort of level of, mm-hmm. of complexity. Thankfully, I'm sure you're not charged with teaching the singers the score, but how much of a challenge is it, nevertheless, to be presiding over a score of this complexity?
It was incredibly daunting at first. This has been a year-long project for me, and I still remember the terror of kind of opening up a score, and you're right, having a tempo change almost every couple bars, or some kind of adjustment that needs to be made on a measure-by-measure basis. It's very daunting, and it's very awkward at first when you're trying to learn a score, and you have to kind of internalize all of these changes. But that's why you start working early on. You know, I feel like I've reached a good point now, along with the singers, of course, where you internalize all of these tempo changes so that they're completely natural. And they are. Once you get comfortable with them, there's a dramatic reason, there's a musical reason that they're all there. And it just takes some time so that you're not thinking about, oh, you know, here Puccini wants to go faster, or here he wants to go slower, but that the energy, the music itself, you are naturally making those changes. And I think that's how this music really needs to go.
Say a quick word, if you would, about visually what this production has to offer, and a word about William Florescu's direction of it.
Yeah, I was really delighted that Bill was going to be directing this. You know, he has a wonderful way of working with singers, and it makes a huge difference when you see singers that very much trust the director, but a director that also trusts them to bring their own personality and ideas to a production. Watching it all come together is really wonderful. It's a pretty traditional staging and set. At least as far as I can tell. Obviously, I haven't seen the whole thing in person put up yet. But, you know, it keeps to the traditional storyline of this young geisha girl in Japan. And I think, you know, it has the opening lines of this opera are all about this house that has these sliding doors, and so it can constantly shift shape and appearance. And it looks very cool in that sense, and that's what this production has, is that all the walls are kind of movable.
Mm.
And so we're able to create lots of different, changes of light and kind of the feeling of the room, whether doors are all open or whether everything's closed up. There's a lot of fun to be had with that. So I like this production. It seems like it allows the singers to bring the drama themselves. You know, it doesn't ask for this epic scene to be set around them, but that it gets very personal and very intimate, which is, you know, really that's what this opera is.
Of course.
About, you know, personal connections, and it's a very intimate piece. So I think this set is going to be just perfect for that, and the way Bill works with these singers, it's an incredibly emotional process also, and I think it's going to really show on stage.
Mm. Puccini's Madama Butterfly comes to the Milwaukee Florentine, and on the podium, Francesco Lecce Chong. It's been great to meet you, and best wishes with these performances, and best wishes to this next chapter, which takes you to Pittsburgh. And we hope a lot of happy and satisfying music making is in your future. And thank you again for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thanks very much. It's been great to be here.
Spend a few minutes talking with, in a sense, one of the good guys in the cast of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. We're going to be speaking with baritone Mark Walters, who performs the very important role of Sharpless, who is one of the American officials who appears in the opera. He is a friend of B.F. Pinkerton. And Sharpless is a much more sympathetic figure as well. And his presence is really crucial to sort of the emotional dynamics of this particular play. And I'm excited to be able to speak with Mark Walters about it. Mark Walters, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here with you.
First of all, tell us about your prior connection. I meant to check on this and I neglected to do so. Your prior connection, if any, with the Milwaukee Florentine, or is this your first time appearing with the Florentine?
Well, I sang 2 seasons here ago as my debut as Germain in La Traviata.
Ah, very good. And I've noticed from reading your biography that actually the music of Giuseppe Verdi figures very, very prominently in your career. Tell us where you come from originally and how singing and then specifically opera came to be such an important part of your life.
Well, you know, originally there's a little bit of Milwaukee DNA in my system. My mother informed me a few years ago that I was conceived in Milwaukee.
Okay.
My father was attending the Milwaukee Institute of Technology when they were first married. And I'm originally from Bettendorf, Iowa, Quad City area, so not too far away. And I grew up in Iowa and you know, had a great public school system. And there was music on my mother's side of the family. She was an amateur pianist, and her father was a trained tenor, although a carpenter by profession. And so she was the one that really kind of pushed me into that area when I was younger.
Hmm. So, for instance, as a junior high school kid, singing was kind of the primary focus of your life, even at that point?
Well, I was very involved with music, although I did kind of everything. I didn't know it was going to be my career at that point, so I played basketball and football and high jumped a little bit in track. And it was really in college. I went to the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls, and I was a music education major. I was getting prepared to teach. And that's when I first encountered opera. I had been taking voice lessons as an elective, and my teachers encouraged me to think about performing as a possible career at that point. And one of my teachers encouraged me to go to a summer program at Luther College in Iowa. They used to do a summer opera and had a training program for young singers. So there were 12 singers there in their early 20s that also they were going to be opera singers. And I said, I think if they can do this, I think maybe I can do this too. Mm. So that was kind of the real shift over into only pursuing opera. I put away my French horn, told my parents that I was going to try to perform before I did any teaching. And that was kind of the real beginning of my serious pursuit of opera.
Very good. Well, the rest is history, as you've carved out for yourself an impressive career that's taken you all kinds of different places. What have the surprises been about what this life has turned out to be compared to what you imagined it would be?
Well, I knew that the pursuit of the drama and the vocal development and technique were obvious when you go into opera. You know, what I hoped was that if I had success, I would travel and that would be my way to see the world. So I've sung Don Giovanni in Osaka, Japan, and I've sung La Traviata in Bergen, Norway. And I've had some offers to sing in Italy, but it usually comes up about 4 days before they want you to be there. So there is an agency in Rome that I was associated with for a while, and, you know, I get a call, you know, once a year or so, and they say, can you be here to do Rigoletto in 4 days? I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm already committed, and I need to get a hold of me a little sooner. So the travel and really seeing other parts of the world and even seeing the U.S. was really important to me and appealed to me as I got into it.
Mm. Let's talk about this wonderful opera, Madama Butterfly, by Giacomo Puccini, and the role of Sharpless. It's a relatively modest role compared to some of the things you've done, like the title role of Verdi's Rigoletto, for instance, where So much of that opera and its emotional and musical weight is carried on your shoulders. Sharpless is not quite that same role, and yet he plays a very crucial role. And Sharpless gets to sing a couple of the most amazing pieces of music in this beautiful score. Tell us what appeals to you about the role of Sharpless, and in particular, some of the really great music you get to sing as part of this role.
Right. Well, Sharpless is different, and as you said, it's not the, he doesn't motivate the plot in the same way other roles like Rigoletto and Scarpia in Tosca, you know, are really the reason the plot moves along. Sharpless, my thought about Sharpless is that he reflects the audience point of view, in that he allows the audience, or helps the audience, feel real sympathy for the situation the butterfly has gotten into. And he also helps the audience vent a little bit of their anger towards Pinkerton. And that's my big view on how Sharpless works in the plot, is that he kind of is a channel for the audience to become involved on stage. And musically, it's different for me than almost any role that I've ever sung, in that it's very mezzo voce singing quite a bit of the time. So, you know, you're commiserating with Madama Butterfly and trying to tell her, you know, the bad news that she's about to encounter. And so you're working with sort of a limited dynamic area, but you have to find a lot of ways to communicate big emotions within this context. And that's been an interesting challenge for me, and it's been a kind of a vocal technical challenge and growth during this time also.
Hmm. I especially love the duet which you get to sing with Pinkerton in the first act. You are kind of the consulate in this Japanese community, and he is, of course, a naval officer, and you are kind of having a drink together and toasting America, and the way Puccini even quotes little snatches of the Star Spangled Banner. I just find it some of the most brilliant and innovative writing in this whole score, that, I mean, which I love start to finish. But I imagine that has to be of great delight to get to sing a wonderful duet like that.
It is, and you know, the tenor Eric Berry here is a great singer, and it's his first time to do the role, and so it's really exciting to watch him explore the nuances. And when Sharpless first enters the stage, he's got a very different view of Pinkerton. You know, I think Pinkerton reminds Sharpless of maybe how he was in his youth, you know, a little brash, you know, proud to be an American, you know, be out exploring and maybe not always aware of the consequences that his actions might bring. But he is definitely a fan of Pinkerton when he first encounters him. And so there's definitely a little bit of, you know, a buddy-buddy kind of duet that gets at the beginning, and you know, when the American theme kicks in, there's a little tingle in the air when it happens too.
Mm. It's such a wonderful score. Say a quick word about the pleasure of appearing with the Milwaukee Florentine.
Well, I first had, I worked with Bill Florescu, the artistic and general director, maybe 10 years ago in Nashville. We did HMS Pinafore, Gilbert Sullivan together. And I really enjoyed working with him at that point, and seeing him here working with his company, it's really great to see, you know, a good guy, you know, who's motivated and very bright and is able to, you know, bring in the community so much in such a kind way. And that's maybe a really good word to describe Bill also, is he's very smart. You know, he's motivated, but he's also kind. So he gets a lot out of the people that are associated with him, including the singers and his staff and the patrons and board members that I've met. So it's very much a Midwest feel, I guess, when I come home, that I feel when I'm here in Milwaukee.
Right. Well said. Mark Walters, baritone, portrays the role of Sharpless in these performances of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. You can go to florentineopera.org for more information, or call them at 414-291-5700. Mark Walters, very best wishes to you in all that stretches ahead with this career, and thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And we finish out our preview of the Milwaukee Florentines production of Puccini's Madama Butterfly by speaking to the gifted soprano who is taking on the arduous title role of Cho-Cho-San, soprano Allison Cambridge, who has sung highly regarded performances of the music of Mozart, Verdi, Puccini on stages all across the country. She has also done highly acclaimed crossover work as well. I first saw her on the stage performing the role of Julie in Jerome Kern's musical Showboat on the stage of the Lyric Opera of Chicago in a well-received production, and her performance was one of the definite highlights of that beautiful show. So now, for the first time, she takes on the role of Madama Butterfly this weekend with the Milwaukee Florentine.
Well, this is my role debut as Cho-Cho-San, and so I sort of didn't really know what to expect going into my preparation of the role, because I really hadn't prepared anything quite like it before. It's the probably, except for Susanna in Le Nozze di Figaro, which I did many, many years ago, this is actually the longest role that I've ever sung. It's just the most notes and words and time on stage. It's really, it's totally Madame, it's totally Cho-Cho-San's show in that respect. And so for me, it was just, there were several things. I had to simply be able to tackle all of the music. It's a lot of music. And then, of course, the journey that I go on as an actress and really finding my voice as a 15-year-old girl who then becomes an 18-year-old mother and showing that transition in humanity and as a woman, as a person, and bringing that all to life on stage. And in many ways, I've really sort of been continuing to discover the role as we've been in rehearsals, because there's sort of only so much preparation, I realized, that I could do before I got into the staging process and working with the rest of the cast. Of course, I can have my voice lessons and my coachings and go to my acting teacher and all that sort of stuff, but until you're actually getting it on its feet with the maestro and with the other cast members, only then do you really start to inhabit this character.
Hmm.
So that's been my process with it anyway.
Right. What kind of, was it with any trepidation that you actually agreed to sing this role? And can you help us understand the process by which a singer confronts a role? I don't even mean before you, I don't mean at the point that you accept it and begin learning it, mm-hmm. but that point of decision where you decide, yes, I am ready to sing Cho-Cho-San on the stage. I mean, what kinds of things did you think about and weigh in making a decision like that?
It happened really in sort of the best way, I think, that it can happen. I was with Florentine Opera 2 seasons ago singing Mimi in La Boheme, which is a role that I've done many, many times. And when Bill, when general director Bill Florescu had hired me for that role, again, it was a role that I had under my belt for years, and he knew that it was a role that I sang. And then when I actually showed up to begin rehearsals for Boheme, it was maybe after our first or second day, Bill said, you know, Allison, he'd seen me at the Lyric. He said, you know, Allison, I hear your voice seems to have grown and changed a bit even since the last time I heard you, which had been a year prior. And I said, you're right, Bill. Actually, it has. And he says, have you considered other repertoire sort of outside of just your medium Lyric? Have you considered fuller lyrics or spinto repertoire, some of the bigger Puccini and Verdi? And I said, funny you should ask, because I have. And I've been discussing it with my teacher and with my manager and whatnot. And so then really what began was just a real honest conversation, a dialogue between us, between him and my management. And they chose to do Madame Butterfly. And he said, you know, do you feel like you're ready for this role? Is this something that would interest you? And I said, well, we're looking now a year out. I said, I think so. I think that this would be a great time for me to take this part on. I feel like my voice is ready for it, and certainly with, you know, a year of preparation. So that's how that process happens, and happened for me anyway.
So I suppose at this point in time, I could be wrong, but I'm assuming that the Zitz probe with the orchestra has not yet occurred. So at the time that we're talking, you've actually not yet had the experience of singing this music, singing this role with the orchestra underneath you.
No, I haven't. And so that'll be a whole other thing. No, at this point, I've sung it in tiny little studios and rehearsal rooms and rehearsal studios with piano. That's it. So I'm going to learn something at that first Zitz probe, which I believe is, I don't know, it's maybe Monday or Tuesday next week. And so I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm sure. Talk for a moment about working with William Florescu as the director of this production, and tell us what he has conceived for it.
I really enjoy working with Bill. He's a really focused and direct director. He has a vision, and you know, when we get into the rehearsal process, into the rehearsal room, he has everything sort of laid out for what he'd like us to do. However, he also relies on the artists and on the singers to bring their unique vision and whatever to each character and to a rehearsal. So if there is a moment, he says, okay, now Allison, I'd like you to cross stage left on this line. And then he'll say, my interpretation of this line is XYZ, and I think that Church's Son would do this. So like 99% of the time, it's great, and that's what we do. And then there might be a line where I'm like, huh, I actually envisioned this line a different way. I interpreted it differently, and I feel that Cho-Cho-San at this moment might do something else. And we'll talk about it, and he goes, great, well, why don't we try that? Why don't we try both ways? And that's what's really great about Bill, is I feel that he has such an excellent understanding of the score and of the piece, no matter what the piece is, because he also directed the Bohème that I did here two seasons ago. But I feel like I'm in very good hands, very knowledgeable hands. And then also, though, I have the ability to sort of speak up and give my opinion on things and my interpretation. And in that sense, it's a collaborative process. But he's a really excellent director, really, really terrific.
What is it like to be doing a role for the first time when it comes to that kind of matter of, for instance, collaborating, of offering your own thoughts and so on? I suspect that that's a little bit of a different matter, or it feels different to do that when you are offering your thoughts on a role with which you've lived for many years and maybe performed in various productions, versus this, where you are right at the outset. And yet for you to remain silent and not offer up who you are, that would be a terrible mistake.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I'm discovering things just now in the rehearsal process. I feel a certain way that I didn't necessarily feel, you know, a couple months ago when I was just practicing it, just rehearsing it. We staged the end of the opera yesterday, Act 3, and it's very emotional. And now I've sung through it many, many, many times. I've coached it. I've been through the libretto. But yesterday when we began to physicalize it, I got really emotional. And I mean, it was just, like, oh my gosh, this is the part where, you know, my child runs in and I sing this aria to my son. This is the part where I'm getting ready, excuse me, you know, to kill myself. It's all just so intense. And it wasn't until we were staging it and I got it up on its feet that I was really filled with emotion. And so the same thing that happens in the staging process as well. And I feel like as an actress, and as the person who's actually on stage playing this part, it would be a disservice for me not to share my feelings, how I'm feeling about the character that I'm playing. And that's something Bill is always really receptive to, because at the end of the day, I'm portraying this role. And so I feel like I need to believe it. I need to believe my actions and my intentions and why I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing on stage, because that makes it a much more authentic performance.
One thing that we sometimes hear, I've just been reading a classic book about old opera singers called The Last of the Prima Donnas, Rasponi's mm-hmm. book, in which he spoke with all kinds of divas from a bygone era. And I was struck by how several of them who might otherwise have performed the role of Cho-Cho-San mentioned the fact that they never sang the role, never sang the opera, because they just felt like emotionally it was too wrenching. And they right. they were fearful that high level emotionality would somehow kind of get them into some trouble or just something that they just dared not do.
Right.
And I wonder, even when you're at this stage where you're in relatively spare rooms with just an upright piano and not even in the sort of the full bore intensity that's part of being on stage with set and costumes and orchestra, mm-hmm. if nevertheless you're finding that there is an emotional intensity to this, which in it of itself presents a challenge to you, having to also sing it and not just be swept away by the high emotionality right. of what Cho-Cho-San experiences.
Absolutely. One of my coaches, he's coached, several other singers on the role, and he said to me at certain points, he said, okay, Alice, now when you get to this point, you're really going to want to gun it. You're going to be so emotional. He goes, but don't. He goes, I want you to look at your fan or whatever it is. He goes, and pretend like you are looking at a grocery list. He goes, you need to disengage emotionally at this point, or you will sacrifice vocally because it is so emotional. And there were several places where he said, be careful. Your inclination is going to be to do this, to go there dramatically. He goes, in your head, you've got to step back a little bit and not let that emotion get to your throat, frankly, and affect your singing. And so what I've tried to do in my preparation anyway, of course, as you say, because many sopranos, they have their cautionary tales. There are a lot of sopranos who have taken on the role, and it is too much, and they do sacrifice vocally. I would like to not be one of those, those people. So I'm doing my best, and I said this to Bill. I said, I'd like to sing in the rehearsal room as much as I can, and then when we really get into running the show, I don't want to feel like I have to sing full out every single day and go on that intense emotional journey. I want to be able to save it for the show. Excuse me. But have that vocal understanding and landscape and be playing with it throughout the rehearsal process so it doesn't come as a surprise. So I say, okay, now I'm going into this scene. I know it's very intense, but I know what I need to do to handle it vocally and not get too emotionally, not sacrifice vocally because I'm so emotionally invested.
Hmm.
And again, it's my first time with the role, so that's how I'm doing it this time. That's how I'm learning. I may do it differently the next time. But for me, it's what makes the most sense, because I do think with a role like this, you can get into trouble. I sang another very heart-wrenching role when I was very young. I was in a young artist program, and I sang the role of Sor Angelica.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was like our final dress rehearsal, and all of the chorus of nuns, they were sitting and watching my final scene, and I completely broke down. I was like 19 at the time, 19 or 20. And I completely lost it. And I started crying in the middle of my aria. And everybody was in tears. And the director, he was like, Alison, he was like, thank you for going there. Thank you for going to that place. He goes, but now you know. Now you know what your line is.
Mm. And don't go there again.
Right. Pretty much. Exactly. Now you know your line. And you've got to stay just behind it.
Mm, well put.
And so that is what I'm, that's what I'm learning with this role, that I'm going to have to stay just behind that line. And there may be a day where I cross it in rehearsal. But I have to sort of go there to know what the line is.
Say a word about what it's like to take on a role in which you have a very important partner. Well, actually, you have a couple of them. Chocho-san has her handmaid, Suzuki, and, of course, the two of you have a lot of intense connection on stage and sing a beautiful duet together. And, of course, there is the American naval officer that Chocho-san falls in love with, B.F. Pinkerton. And, of course, that's so much the heart and soul of this opera. What is it like to sign up for a role of Chocho-san, for instance, not knowing who will be your Suzuki, not knowing who will be your Pinkerton, and hoping that you will be paired with artists with whom you feel sympathy and work well? I should think that's a really crucial matter of trust when it comes to this.
For sure, for sure. Well, it's interesting because actually everyone in the show, with the exception of Sharpless, this is our role debut. Everybody's making their role debut. So in some sense, I found comfort in that. I thought, okay, well, we're all in the same boat together. We're all learning the ropes together. On the other hand, in general, it's really nice when you're doing a huge role like this to be surrounded by people who are very well-versed in their roles and can sort of help you along. A funny story, I was working with great soprano Diana Silveiro, and she sang Madama Butterfly many times all over the world and at the Met and whatnot. And she goes, "Who is your Suzuki?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know her. You know, I've never met her. I've never worked with her before." And then she told me how she had one woman with whom she worked who did every Suzuki with her in every production.
Really?
Yes. And and she was telling me all these things about the role. She goes, "Now, at this part, usually the director tells the butterfly to do this." She said, "Don't do it. Have Suzuki do it." "There's a lot of running around that you can do. Don't do it. You've got to sing." And she said, "Make Suzuki run around." Now, Bill, before, he didn't even know I had this conversation with Diana, but he does have it staged such that, I mean, Suzuki's really put to work and, you know, working up a sweat by the end by the end of the show. But, you know, I mean, Julia, she's really excellent, and I've really enjoyed working with her. And, you know, we've even planned some sessions outside of rehearsal just so that we can get things, so we can feel like a team out there. And Eric Berry, who's singing the role of Pinkerton, I also didn't know him prior to this. He's a wonderful tenor. I mean, just a really sweet, sweet person, but also a sweet lyrical voice, really lovely. And, you know, frankly, just getting to know everybody off stage as well, I think helps the process because it makes working together on stage that much more genuine and pleasant. And, you know, I was happy to hear him the very first day, and I thought, oh, this is great. He's a lyrical Pinkerton. I'm a more lyrical vocally butterfly, and I think our voices really blend together well. So I was happy to learn that on the first day, and then to know that he's just a wonderful colleague as well.
Oh,
great.
Terrific. Glad to hear that. We're speaking with soprano Allison Cambridge, who will be Chocho-san, the title role in Puccini's Madama Butterfly, in Milwaukee Florentine's production of this superb opera. Before we let you go, Allison, I wanted to ask you about all that you do in your career that does not directly align with roles like Chocho-san and some of the other great opera roles you've done. As I mentioned earlier, you sang in the Lyric Opera of Chicago's highly acclaimed production of Jerome Kern's Showboat, and you've sung George Gershwin on stage and crossed over into the worlds of jazz and cabaret and so on. Has that always been the case, and is that for any sort of design? I mean, for any particular purpose, or are you just simply following the kinds of music that you love and that they just happen to be a kind of a varied spread?
Yeah, it's the latter, really. You know, I grew up listening to all different kinds of music. I didn't sort of just live in a box of listening only to opera. And really, my musical influences were everything from pop to jazz, musical theater, We listened to calypso, reggae, I mean, everything under the sun, hip-hop in my home. And then my mom was a huge classical music buff, and I began playing the piano when I was four. And it really was, I would imitate singers, everything that I heard on the radio of every genre. And that included imitating opera singers. And it was really by accident that a neighbor heard me and said, you know, Allison, I know you do your opera voice as kind of a joke to make your friends laugh. She said, but it's quite good. Maybe you should take a lesson. And that's how I began studying classically. And I was 12 years old, and obviously I had sort of a natural talent for it, you know, when I was quite little. But I'd say my real passion for opera developed throughout the years, and then really it was enhanced when I got to college and sort of realized, hey, I could maybe actually make a career out of this. This is fun. I love doing it. But my interest in other musical genres never waned. You know, I went out for a run on the lakefront yesterday, and I was listening to Beyonce and Britney Spears. I mean, I was like, this is what's getting me going. And so in my career, I've always had the desire to do other things. I would say that the opera world itself has changed significantly over the past 5 to 10 years. So whereas when I first began, I made my professional debut, I mean, I made my Met debut when I was 24 or so, in 2004. That back then, I didn't feel like I necessarily had permission to experiment outside of opera, traditional opera. And then when the opportunity came to do Shogo, I had an offer at the time to sing a Fior de Ligi somewhere in Così fan tutte, and also the opportunity to sing Julie in Shogo. And I thought, gosh, I remember speaking with my manager who said, you know, nobody knows if this is going to be a hit or a flop. It's the first time that a major operatic house has undertaken a traditional musical theater piece. And very happily, it was a huge success. And for me, I got to finally, in an operatic environment, show my crossover and musical theater skills. And it really just opened up the door for me. And the conductor that I worked with at the time, John Demain, he said to me, he goes, Allison, I had no idea. And he'd conducted me in other more classical traditional opera. He said, I had no idea you could sing like this. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I sang in musical theater in high school and blah, blah. He goes, you should maybe do an album of this stuff. Well, that sort of stuck with me. And I collaborated with some really wonderful people on other programs. Kim Scharnberg, who's a terrific Broadway arranger and conductor, and Andy Einhorn. And through my works with them, then I started developing this idea, and we started chatting, hey, I should put together an album. And so that's what my upcoming album is. It's jazz, it's crossover, there's some pop covers, and it's really all the sides of my voice that I've never been able to show on the operatic stage and have never shown in recording until now. And actually, that's what we end up naming the album was Until Now. And it's all happened very organically. But I will say it's slightly against the grain, I guess. I think there are still many people within the opera world who think it's important to sort of stay in your lane. And that's not my personality in general.
Well, We're glad you haven't listened to those voices, because it sounds like the choices you've made have been exactly the right ones, and here you are in this exciting place doing such exciting things. And of course, here's Chocho-san, Madama Butterfly, and what I know will be an exciting role debut for you with the Milwaukee Florentine. Allison Cambridge, what a delight to meet you and to hear about this wide-ranging career. We wish you well with Madama Butterfly and with all that stretches before you. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Great to chat with you. Bye.
And if you would like more information about this weekend's performances of Puccini's Madama Butterfly at the Milwaukee Florentine Opera, you can go to their website, which is florentineopera.org, or you can call them at 414-291-5000.
5700. I'm Gregory Berg. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification.